This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. The day after, as it were, we were at the Belmont Park yesterday live on the apron right in front of the clubhouse with cut-ins all day. Hopefully you jumped on board and watched a little bit of that and enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed our stay down there. It was a beautiful day down at Belmont, a nice fall afternoon with really summer-like weather, sunny and mid-70s, I'm guessing. A little bit of a breeze, but it was a gorgeous day. Nice little crowd down there for Jockey Club Gold Cup Day. And hopefully, as I say, you tuned in. We talked with Pat McKenna, Director of Communications at NYRA, talked a little bit about the change made last week back to essentially the original Belmont schedule. You know, they won't now be moving to Aqueduct earlier. So they'll go the entire normal Belmont meet and back to the 1 o'clock post times. And he talked a little bit about the decision-making there over the first couple of weeks of the Belmont meet. Reviewed a little Saratoga and whatnot and talked a little about the decision-making processes that will go into next season at Saratoga. A little bit later, we had the Big A, Anthony Stabile, gave us some handicapping thoughts. We talked with Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, John Kimmel. That interview actually will rerun today because we talked about his runner in the stakes race this afternoon, Chris Dahl, who was the nice winner up at Saratoga as well. Had that DQ at one point in the meet, and John Kimmel was talking about going up to Canada with that one and elected to stay down here and won, and then aiming for the stake race this afternoon as well. So a little John Kimmel that will replay, as they say, today. But also yesterday we talked out in the paddock, Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown, Bill Mott, Don Little from Centennial about preservationist, and again, interspersed those and more into the afternoon live from Belmont. So, again, thanks to our friends at the New York Racing Association for their hospitality. And thanks to you for tuning in. As I say, hopefully you enjoyed our live on-the-road coverage, Jockey Club Gold Cup Day from Belmont Park. Also want to alert you to promos here at Capital OTB over the well, really today, I was going to say the weekend, but today is, wraps up the weekend, and the 3% Churchill bonus continues today. There are some restrictions on that, but check out the website. If you're going to be playing Churchill today, you have the opportunity to get that 3% bonus. Also, it's an NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Swing on by, wear a jersey. You get in for free, but you also have a chance to win a jersey. Put your name on the squares, and you can win a jersey or perhaps a food voucher. But more importantly, you can watch all the NFL games and watch all the racing action as well. That's every Sunday during the football season here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Also want to alert you that there will be nighttime thoroughbred racing available tonight here on the network and via CapitalOTVBet.com, and that's going to include the Oklahoma Derby, which will be part of the Remington card, 8:24 Central, so about 9:30 our time. Nice field. We'll talk about this one a little later. Field of 12 scheduled. Mucho Gusto's in there. Owendale, the Oklahoma Derby, part of our coverage tonight from Remington Park. All right, going to jump in and do a little stakes recap. Coming up towards the end of the program, we'll be joined by Dave Grenick from the Daily Racing Form, and we'll recap the New York Stakes with Dave. But there were some stakes certainly over the past couple of days, actually. If you go back to opening day at Santa Anita on Friday, the two-year-old stakes play into it. but some stakes yesterday at both Santa Anita and Churchill. It would be, you know, we're in that Breeders' Cup prep season, so these would be Breeders' Cup prep type of races. It's hard to look at really what happened yesterday at either venue and think we have any powerhouses. Very different in New York. Coming out of New York, I think we have some very nice horses with maybe eclipse potential. But at Santa Anita and Churchill Downs, not so much. The notable at Santa Anita, though, was who didn't win. And we'll take a look at the stretch run from the Awesome Again yesterday. The winner will be number 5, Mongolian Groom, at 25-1, or from Marshall, Mongolian Groom, the old runaway groom call. Mongolian Groom, nice buyer figure last time in the Woodward, hit a triple digit, but finished behind Preservationist, ran 5th in there. So you couldn't jump on board that one with a whole lot of confidence, certainly, but Mongolian Groom upsets, as I say, but running 2nd, as you see, McKinsey. And as I noted, the race more notable for who didn't win than who did. Look at the gallop out here. It's just running away from them. Looked pretty good at 25-1, $52.80 for Mongolian Groom. McKinsey 2nd in there under Mike Smith for Bob Baffert at 30 cents to the dollar. Highest Power, who was the 2nd choice at 3-1. Or Higher Power, excuse me, runs 3rd. And once you got past those two, 30 cents to the dollar and 3-1 for Higher Power, everybody else jumped up to double digits. 2nd longest price on the board in the field of 6, though. Mongolian Groom looks pretty good, essentially taking them all the way and kind of pulling away in the stretch. Again, people have been saying it all year long, and I guess this maybe just validates it a little bit. This handicap division is kind of up in the air. And off of the Whitney, or everybody's pointing towards McKinsey as being the one, perhaps. But this is a horse that in 6 starts now this season, only a couple of wins and 4 second-place finishes. Ran 2nd 2 starts, or 3 starts back now, in the Met Mile behind Matoli, and that was a pretty good effort. That was bookended by a win in the Ali Sheba Churchill, and again, the Whitney. The Whitney effort was certainly very, very good up at Saratoga. Grade 1 win, and so McKinsey probably still is sitting in that, particularly given what happened yesterday in New York, sitting in a pretty good spot in the older division as far as chasing that eclipse. But, you know, again, you look at a record of six starts, only a couple of wins and 4 seconds. I don't think he's got a lock on this by any means. But McKinsey yesterday running 2nd and Mongolian Groom winning in the Awesome Again. Moving on to the Rodeo Drive. This one for the fillies and mares going 1.25 miles on the grass at Santa Anita. The winner here will be Mirth, the number 1 horse. The favorite running 2nd at 6-5 is number 2, Beau Recall. Beau Recall, a couple starts back, finished 2nd to Rushing Fall in New York in the Just a Game. Last time out, won the Yellow Ribbon out at Santa Anita, but can only get up for 2nd. Nice closing effort to get up for 2nd here over Alicia's World. That was the horse that earlier in the career had been trained by Chad Brown, Alicia's World, but has been, the last 5-6 starts out in Southern California, trained by Richard Baltus now. But that one 3rd. Mirth, the winner for Phil D'Amato. Mike Smith on board there. Another one that was pretty much a wire-to-wire kind of a job, but at 6-1, $14.20. And again, fillies and mares on the turf. You would think this would play into that filly and mare turf race coming up in the Breeders' Cup. You know, I don't know if any of these really jump off the page as the kind you really pay attention to these going into the Breeders' Cup, other than this race was at Santa Anita. And so these are horses that now have some experience over the track, and that's got to be potentially a little bit of a bonus for this crew. So, again, that was the Rodeo Drive Mirth with a little bit of an upset. Well, actually, it was a pretty good upset. I'm just looking now at the odds, and in the field of 6, the 6-1 was the 5th choice in here. So I guess it was a little bit of an upset there, regardless of the fact that Mike Smith was on board, was coming out of a 5th-place finish last time in a little stake over at Del Mar. And again, Mirth, 8 starts so far this year and only one win coming into the race. So now 2-for-9. So I guess that justifies kind of the betting public taking a little bit of a sideways glance at this one. And as I say, it also justifies my thought that I'm not sure that these races were producing the kind of powerhouses that you're going to really key on in the Breeders' Cup. Also, John Henry Turf Championship yesterday at Santa Anita. This one for the three-year-olds and up, also a mile and a quarter on the grass. Grade two, couple $100,000 up for grabs in the John Henry Turf Championship. It will be number three, Cleopatra Strike, continuing the theme. Upset here with a $20.60 mutual payoff. The favorite, United, will be number five, running third. Acclimate runs second, and here is a close-up second choice. But the chart margin of length for Cleopatra's Strike, Phil D'Amato, trainee, gets it done. Came off a couple of second-place finishes this year in kind of an abbreviated campaign or stop-and-start campaign. Had a start back in January and then laid off until September 2nd at Del Mar. And again, there were two close-up second-place finishes so far this year. Kind of broke through with this one, as I say, at a $20.60 mutual. Acclimate running second in this race as the number eight horse. And again, United running third. And I'm just United. Yeah, the Richard Mandela horse coming out of an optional claimer at Del Mar. Early in the Del Mar meet, though, hadn't been seen since the middle of July. So maybe this one benefits. This horse is still pretty lightly raced, United, the horse, the favorite that ran third. So United may be one that will benefit. Only nine starts as a four-year-old. And again, hadn't been seen since the middle of July. So that maybe wind up being an interesting prep for United. If you were on board yesterday, probably wouldn't jump off. I mean, the third-place finish isn't inspiring. But again, there may be, with the layout being lightly raced, this may be a horse that will kind of benefit and move forward from that effort. All right, let's move on and take a look at some of the action at Santa Anita on Friday. And that is the two two-year-old stakes. This one has maybe a little more Breeders' Cup potential. In that, you know, two-year-olds, and now they have a race over the track where the Breeders' Cup will be held. And also, these are a couple of pretty good-looking Baffert horses. But maybe more notably, first up, we're going to take a look at the Chandelier from Friday. And Friday, again, was opening day at Santa Anita. Chandelier, grade one event for the two-year-old fillies. The winner in here will be number four, Best, as the 1-5 favorite for Bob Baffert. Career debut was an okay second at Del Mar, and then a nice eye-popping win in the Del Mar debutante last time. Follows it up with kind of a gutsy performance here over Comical. Comical, a Doug O'Neill runner that has shown a little bit of talent, although the last couple weren't necessarily that promising. But Best clearly holds off. But as I say, what's notable here, John Velasquez on board. And John Velasquez out in Southern California on Friday for opening day at Santa Anita on a couple of these Baffert two-year-olds. And that race right there broke the all-time career graded stakes win record for John Velasquez. He had tied it last week in New York. He was tied with Jerry Bailey, but now he has the sole lead of career graded stakes wins, and he went out to Southern California to do it on Bass. And again, Bass paying $2.40. These two-year-old races probably will play into a little potential interest moving into the two-year-old Breeders' Cup races, again, out at Santa Anita. So win over the track is a bonus as well. But John Velasquez back a couple of races later out at Santa Anita on Friday. He was on board Eight Rings for Bob Baffert. And he adds to his record-breaking total. Eight Rings will be the number three horse in here. Career debut was a very good win. The follow-up, though, he lost his jockey in the Del Mar Futurity. That did not deter the betting public. They made Eight Rings the 6-5 favorite. John Velasquez on board and just kind of riding here to a sixth-length chart margin victory over American Theorem. American Theorem, pretty good-looking debut winner at Del Mar in the only start of the career, and kind of validates that with a good-looking second place. Storm the Court ran third at 19-1. Express Train, second choice in the betting, disappointed a little bit running fourth. But eight rings again. Now three starts and two wins. The two wins, the career debut, and that race on Friday. They bookend one that you just draw a line through with the horse having a little trouble at the start and dumping the jockey. So essentially, really, two for two so far for the Baffert runner. And again, you would think this will play in also to the two-year-old stake Breeders' Cup weekend out at Santa Anita. So the Friday races, the two two-year-old races, I think will have a little Breeders' Cup impact. The races yesterday, it's a little tougher to make that case. Other than now you got to scratch your head a little bit about McKenzie, perhaps. But again, congratulations to John Velasquez on those two stakes. And then, you know, we will talk, obviously, as far as New York, where he came back. And go back now. I have touted it since we recorded it. The last Thursday of the meet, I think, if you go to our Capital OTB YouTube page, I interviewed John Velasquez on Racing Across America that morning. And we talked about a number of topics, but one of them, he had started that Saratoga meet off kind of a little cool and then clearly got hot. And got hot not just at Saratoga, but he was winning in Chicago. He won at Del Mar. And so part of the conversation was what it's like to make those cross-country trips and then have to make the quick turnaround and come back. And clearly from Friday to Saturday, he did that and did it very successfully with those two wins in the two-year-old races out at Santa Anita. And then, boom, the red eye to get back to New York for some really nice stakes action and stakes victories there. And he talked a little bit about the sleep and sleep deprivation and kind of trying to make flights and whatnot. Again, pull up that interview from the end of the Saratoga meet with John Velasquez because it was interesting to hear him talk about just kind of that nuts and bolts side of the jockey game. All right, let's go to Churchill yesterday. Again, potential Breeders' Cup preps that I'm not sure are going to be the kind that people look at the Breeders' Cup PPs and say, oh, the Lucas Classic, let's kind of jump on that one. But the Lucas Classic yesterday at Santa Anita, obviously the handicap division, $250,000 up for grabs, mile and an eighth in the grade three. It'll be Mojito Rojo at 8-1 winning, number nine, Silver Dust second, Sir Anthony at 20-1 third. So it was clearly a little bit of a head-scratcher on top. The favorite in here is Quip, 2-1. The four-horse runs a disappointing sixth in the field of 10. Nice ding-dong battle here that Mojito Rojo just wins by a neck over Silver Dust. But as I say, Kulkulin was in the here as well. That one wound up running seventh tenfold. Winds up running eighth in here. So there were some horses that had a little more potential to be interesting on the way to the Breeders' Cup, perhaps, that really didn't offer up much. So as I say, it's hard to make cases for some of these races at Santa Anita. And Churchill yesterday is offering up even really interesting alternatives. I suppose you can make that case, but also on the card yesterday at Churchill, again, that subcategory that I like, the three-year-olds on the turf, the Jefferson Cup, mile and an eighth, $125,000. The favorite was Scars Are Cool, very lightly raced with only four career starts, was coming out of a disappointing 10th in the Travers, had broken the maiden in the start before that up at Saratoga. And again, with only four career starts, they decided to give this one a little shot in a stake on the grass, and you know, it's an experiment. I don't know, I'm guessing experiment failed perhaps. In the field of six, Scars Are Cool is going to wind up, in the field of seven, Scars Are Cool will wind up six as the 9-5 favorite. The winner in here, Spectacular Gem, again, continuing this kind of theme at Churchill and Santa Anita yesterday of horses upsetting. So $21.40 here, chart margin of 1.75. Spectacular Gem was coming out of a little stakes win over Indiana Grand, so maybe overlooked because of the Indiana start, but did show a little bit of ability over there at 35-1. So paid 70 some dollars in the previous start and comes back yesterday and pays 21. So in this, as I say, subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf, maybe this is one that is is a little clever on the day yesterday. Spectacular gem. Hasn't had a lot of turf experience in an 11-start career, only four turf tries, and now a couple of wins, a couple of stakes wins. So maybe Spectacular Gem, one to pay attention to going forward. We'll see how that one does. And then the ACAC also yesterday at Churchill Downs. The ACAC was for three-year-olds and up, going the one-turn mile. So again, you would think potentially there's Breeders' Cup dirt mile opportunities here. And who knows? Dale may have one with Mr. Freeze. This is potentially one that comes out. Lake Spectacular Gem, I suppose. Potentially one that comes out with a little bit of interest. Number 7 is Mr. Freeze. 6-1. Thirst for Life, the number 4, runs second. Number 5, Mr. Darcy, third. The favorite in here, a lukewarm favorite, was Mr. Jägermeister. That one at 3-1 runs fifth. But this was a pretty good performance from Mr. Freeze, who had some promise as we got through the first few starts of the career. In the first four starts of the career, three wins, including the West Virginia Derby. That was last year. And then moved on to the Pennsylvania Derby last year and wound up a disappointing, well-beaten eighth against McKinsey. The career debut this year, they tried the turf. That was a poor performance. That was a January race. Now has come back and had an August 11th race where the horse ran a decent second, and this one. So this was career start number 8, career win number 4. Again, it was at a mile. It was a chart margin of a length and a half. Mr. Freeze, maybe a little bit interesting. We'll see what Dell does next, but if they were thinking, you know, and I'm not saying that's going to be the game plan necessarily coming out of this, but this is that Breeders' Cup kind of prep season. So if they were thinking Breeders' Cup dirt mile, that was an okay effort for a fairly lightly raced horse. All right, I'm just looking at the clock there. Before we go to the break, I will note, again, we'll talk with Dave Groening about the races in New York, but I do have some Winner's Circle audio from Shug McGahee. He walked into the Winner's Circle, and while the media was there, did record some audio with him. And I just wanted to note, the DQ yesterday in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, we were driving home, I was checking social media. It was a little more controversial than I assumed, although that's part of social media, I guess. You have to have the outrage on social media. I thought it was a okay decision. I mean, I it wasn't like I was clearly tilting in that direction. I like to, put it in percentage-wise. For me, I would have tilted towards the DQ, maybe 75-25, 70-30. I think the inside horse did move Code of Honor out. Vino Rosso did. If you watch the head-on, they are going to move, and we'll show that later, they are going to move about four paths, and the margin was like that. So for me, there was talk about herding. Herding to me is something different. Herding is kind of a no-contact thing. It's more intimidation, where a horse on the inside moves out and the horse or jockey on the outside kind of react. And before there's a collision, they kind of do the right thing and move out also, but their forward momentum is stopped. And so I think it's worth having a discussion, should that be a DQ as well. But I think when there's contact, it becomes a little clearer, and there was definitely contact yesterday. So I didn't really have a problem with the DQ. But as I say, there was certainly some vocal criticism of it on social media yesterday. We'll talk a little bit about that again with Dave Groening later. But first, we'll play, and we'll go right into the commercial from this and then come back and do some handicapping. But as we go to the commercial, again, I went into the Winner's Circle and recorded some audio with Shug right after the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He'll talk about the Code of Honor performance. He'll talk about the DQ. What's next? Are they going to head to the Breeders' Cup? And also somebody asked about John Velasquez. When you had John Velasquez on, what kind of confidence did that give you, given how well he's been doing over, the past month and a half or so? So up next, a little audio straight from the Winner's Circle yesterday after the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Shug McGahee will head to a commercial, come back, a little handicapping. Stay tuned.
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and You're In Series.
To win one of these Challenge Series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the Challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our Win and You're In race, provides the top middle distance horse in Europe. We saw Highland Reel run in both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win and you're in.
About Code of Honor and be able to step up against older horses the way he did today. I thought, you know, maybe that, you know, I thought maybe Johnny had to move a little bit sooner than he wanted to, just because Tacticus and Preservation weren't able to put the pressure on Vino Rosso. And so, you know, but I thought we had him at every jump, and then he kind of came out, and you know, I knew he'd come out. I didn't know they'd bump because I'm watching sideways, but you know, I saw the head on. You know, and then they threw the objection and the inquiry, and you know, I thought there was probably a good chance.
So you were confident they?
I wasn't confident in anything, but I thought there was a good chance.
What did Johnny tell you immediately after the race?
He said he got me twice pretty good.
Does this put you as the top 3-year-old right now?
I would have to think so. I mean, who's done more? You know, I mean, Maximum Security's won a couple of grade ones, but you know, where is he now? And you know, we've been going since the 1st of January. I think that says a lot.
Chuck, what was going through your mind as those two horses were battling down the stretch?
Well, I thought we were getting by him at any time. So I was, you know, and then when the other horse opened up ahead, I said, well, you know, we run out of horse. But then when we came back, you know, just showed how game he was. And yeah, this horse is a pretty good horse now. You know, I mean, he's made so much improvement since the Derby. And, you know, I couldn't be any prouder of him than I am.
Is the Breeders' Cup something you'll consider?
Well, we'll see how it comes out of it, and we'll talk. I'll talk to Mr. Farish, and we'll figure it out from there.
Does beating older?
Go ahead. No.
Beating older horses change that dynamic of the horse. I mean, 3-year-old championship.
Well, I have to think so. I mean, nobody else has done that, and you know, we've got to beat all comers now. The only one we so. You know, all this races since the Mucho, whatever it was, have all been good races. And, you know, to be able to step it up today and be competitive with older horses, I think says a lot for him.
Thanks. When you watched the incident there, did you talk about what you were thinking?
Well, I'm watching it sideways, Dave, and I knew the other horse had come out, but I didn't know what had happened. I walked off thinking we got beat, you know, and then I saw it on TV, and then they threw the objection and the inquiry up. I told Allison, I said, we better walk back down here, you know. And then when I said something to Johnny, he said, you know, he got me twice, you know, pretty good. And, you know, for him to fight back and just get beat that far, I think says a whole lot for him.
Were you surprised? I mean, did that sort of explain maybe why he didn't go by? Because it looked like you were going to go right on by.
Yeah, I thought he was going right on by, too. Yeah, I think so. I think still, you know, his immaturity a little bit. And, you know, these jocks are, you know, that's kind of their intimidation factor, to let them drift a little bit. And, you know, with him getting bumped a little bit and just getting beat a nose that late in the race, I think probably made a difference.
What does this do now, you know, as far as putting in the equation to what you do now?
Well, you know, we'll see how he comes out of it. I'll talk to Mr. Parrish and we'll make up our mind from there.
Well, consideration.
Yeah, sure. Sure, no doubt.
What can you say about what Johnny's been doing lately?
Well, you know, I mean, he went through a little bit of a cold spell there, but you knew one thing. When he woke up, he was going to wake up. And, you know, I mean, that was one of the good things that I felt about this, about having him today was, you know, nobody could really figure out what was going to happen in a race. In a five-horse field going a mile and a quarter here. But I felt like Johnny knew this racetrack probably better than anybody because as many times as he's ridden over it, and especially, you know, I think when it comes to five-horse race, I think we saw it today, it's a rider's race. And, you know, he had to go on and put some pressure on Vino Rosso maybe a little bit earlier than he wanted to. But, you know, but that's why he's who he is. You know, I can't take my hat off to him enough for, you know, I think he taught him something in the Dwyer and he learned and he's taking it to here.
Thanks, Sean.
You know, I think if the Breeders' Cup were on the East Coast, Churchill, or certainly if it was in New York, it would be a no-brainer for Shug. I think out in Southern California, it becomes a little more of a question mark. But I was talking with people yesterday, and they made the good point now. With a couple of wins like this, the Traverse and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and given where the handicap division is, a win potentially in the Breeders' Cup Classic would put Code of Honor in the conversation for Horse of the Year potentially. Certainly three-year-old of the year would be locked up. By that, and I think he moved into a good position yesterday as far as three-year-old. But Horse of the Year, and as people brought that up, I thought, yeah, you know what, that becomes an interesting conversation. So we'll see where they decide to go. But certainly off of yesterday, you think he's an interesting player if they decide to go out to Southern California and give the Breeders' Cup a shot. All right, let me do a little handicapping. First up, we'll take a look at the Miss Grillo at Belmont. Then I'll go over and take a look at the Oklahoma Derby as well before we take our next break. And Dave Grenig will join us, Daily Racing Forum New York correspondent. We'll talk a little New York racing yesterday with Dave. Before we do that, though, today's racing, the Miss Grillo, we looked at the boys' side yesterday, and of the four stakes races, that was clearly the one that had the most potential for a little bit of chaos or a little bit of a head-scratcher. Structure, certainly for Chad, was playable. The buyers were maybe a little bit light, but as always, horses with one start can move forward nicely. Structor did. I just, in this one, I went 4-6-3-2 in the Miss Grillo. I put Cristal on top. Had the kind of controversial DQ up at Saratoga, despite a really convincing win in the maiden breaker. And we had John Kimmel on subsequently. And he was saying, you know, I'm treating it like the horse won, and we're going to shop around and look for stakes for the next race. And excuse me, at that point, they were looking perhaps the Natalma up at Woodbine, a win and you're in situation. They just worried about maybe not getting into the race, given the horse was technically still a maiden. So they elected the P.G. Johnson. Horse had all kinds of trouble at the start there and still in the stretch had a nice late run to just get up. She's been phenomenal, excuse me, in a couple of races. So I'm going to keep Cristal on top. Sparkling Sky, however, for Todd Pletcher has looked good and has looked to be improving in the first two starts of the career and could be interesting this afternoon. My Sassy Sarah, another one like Pletcher's Sparkling Sky, a couple of nice improving efforts. This one, Sparkling Sky, however, has been the mile on 16th. My Sassy Sarah, a couple of sprints, but I think the stretch out might be intriguing for that one. Chad Brown has Jazique in here, who is maybe similar to Structor in that the number looks a little bit light, but you know what? Wouldn't be surprised to see that one kind of step up and improve like the Barnmate did yesterday. So in the Belmont Miss Grillo, the eighth race this afternoon, I have a 4-6-3-2. And before I talk about the Remington Derby, again, in the paddock yesterday, we caught up with trainer John Kimmel and talked a little Cristal. So why don't we listen to that, and I'll come back and take a look at the Oklahoma Derby. Up next, John Kimmel. Tomorrow's version of two-year-olds on the turf, the fillies, Cristal, back after winning the last stakes race. When we talked to you at Saratoga, you were thinking about going to Canada. What was the change of plans?
Well, the concern was that if a maiden might not get in, we didn't know there was plenty of nominations. And I didn't want to get in a situation where we hadn't had a race and she not get in, and then we would have been waiting even longer. So we were home, she was doing well, so we decided to take a shot. For all intents and purposes, she broke her maiden in that race, and we had to treat it as such.
How'd she come out of the last, and what do you think of on Sunday afternoon?
Well, you know, I think she had a little, she is at a disadvantage in that race. She didn't break sharp because a starter and her had a little situation in the gate, and she broke in the air and spotted the field five lengths, and she still won. So, you know, hopefully that won't happen, because you get a little tougher competition. You can't afford to give up that kind of distance. So hopefully she'll settle in behind without having to be too far back, and this longer stretch will give her a little more room to make a good kick.
Good luck on Sunday.
Thanks.
Caught up with John Kimmel in the paddock yesterday, and I should note the guys in the control room happily cut off the beginning because I kept calling the horse Chantal for some reason. I had that stuck in my head. And finally, about the third time I did it, Kimmel said, "It's Cristal." So now I have it. Now it's firmly in there. Cristal, who I do like today in the Miss Grillo race number 8 at Belmont Park. We appreciate the time John took yesterday in the paddock. Also today, and again, this is tonight, but we will have nighttime thoroughbred racing. The Oklahoma Derby, nice stakes card out at Remington that, again, will be kind of a nighttime card. And I think, didn't I hear control, they kick off at about 4 o'clock today?
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 o'clock our time?
Yeah.
So that'll be when the card kicks off. This race, the Remington Park Oklahoma Derby, will go off our time at about 9:30. It's, I think it's the next to last race. It's race 12 on their card, though. But, boy, it's a nice field in here. Grade 3 event, $400,000 up for grabs, a mile and an eighth. I think the betting public will tilt towards Mucho Gusto for Bob Baffert. A good third last time in the Travers with a nice triple-digit buyer. Second behind Maximum Security in the Haskell before that with a triple-digit. I just have to stick with Owendale. I used Owendale in the Travers, wound up fifth in there. Probably has to step it up, not much, and maybe Mucho Gusto comes back a couple of points. I think a couple of points swing from either of them may make Owendale interesting. Owendale also, though, is hung out on the outside, but Mucho Gusto is too there, the 11 and the 10. I have an 11, 10, 5, and 3. So we'll see. Again, this may be just one of those. I've been kind of married to Owendale a little bit this season. I have liked him. I want to stick around for one more. But the horse to beat clearly is Mucho Gusto. Tax could be interesting. Saw Randy Hill yesterday in the paddock a couple of times, and he has Tax coming in. The Jim Dandy win was nice, but the seventh place finish in the Travers a little disappointing. Will be very interesting, though, cutting back to that mile and an eighth on Sunday night out in Oklahoma. So Tax in the mix, and Bank It for Steve Asmussen. Has been racing against state breds over the past few starts, won the New York Derby at the Finger Lakes, good close-up second last time in the Albany. The winner there of the Albany, Funny Guy, another New York bred, obviously, also showing up in the Oklahoma Derby. So a couple of New York breds in here that could be intriguing, but I'm going to tilt a little bit towards Bank It to maybe add a little value to some of the plays in here. But in the Oklahoma Derby tonight, and again, we'll have it here on the network, there will be thoroughbred racing tonight, 11, 10, 5, and 3. All right, we'll take our last break. When we come back, our friend Dave Grenig will join us. He was obviously at Belmont yesterday as well as we were, and he was covering all the stakes action for the Daily Racing Forum. We'll get his take on some of the stakes results from Saturday afternoon right after this. Stay tuned. Be back in a couple.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flicks Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you've come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Again, the day after a big day down in New York at Belmont with the Jockey Club and supporting stakes as well. And who better to comment on those than Dave Grenick from the Daily Racing Forum. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. And before we comment on the stakes, I want you to talk about one of the undercard races because I found this intriguing. I will tip my cap to David Aragona. We during the handicapping program yesterday, the fifth race, Princessa Caroline, the sibling to Lady Eli. I looked at the 9-2 during the handicapping program, and I said, you know, New York bettors are pretty savvy, and they'll listen to our program. They may listen to Andy Serling and Stabile. And once the Lady Eli name comes out, that 9-2 won't hold up. But sure enough, Aragona nailed it. I was shocked. The Lady Eli sibling, with a nice-looking win, pays $11. Was there a negative workout buzz or something at work?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I don't know why that. I guess they were all over the other Chad Brown trained runner. And I tell you one thing about those who bet New York racing: when they fixate on a horse, they do fixate on a horse. And I guess they got fixated on the wrong horse.
Yeah, that was. And as I say, it was a nice looking win as well. So yeah. kind of shocked. I liked the horse, so I was thrilled with the price, but I was amazed that the horse did go off at that kind of a price. All right, let's go to a little bit later in the day and work our way back. Let's start with the highlight, the Jockey Club Gold Cup. A little controversy on the day, and I said at the top of the show, I was kind of surprised. I'd be interested to hear your take. I thought it was a fair DQ. The social media was talking about herding, and to me, herding is more intimidation and no contact or very little contact, where one horse is kind of reacting to another horse. Here, there was clearly some contact, and we'll look at the stretch run and then the head-on and also the margin on the win photo. But it will be number three, Vino Rosso, on the inside. Coming under the wire first, number two, Code of Honor second, Tacitus third. But subsequently, after the stewards took a look at it, they reversed things and put Code of Honor over Vino Rosso. What was your take on the Jockey Club?
Yeah, I did not think it was the right call. Okay. I didn't think it was an easy call, but I did not think it was the right call. I thought that, there was brushing. I think there was more brushing than bumping. I never really thought, I know Johnny says Code of Honor was knocked off balance. I'm sorry, I don't see that. I see him running just as hard every step of the way as he, through the stretch. And he had ample opportunity to get by the horse and never did. I thought this was one of those situations where you could, find Irad Ortiz, maybe, but leave the result alone. I'll put it this way. I think I would have disqualified Vino Rosso in the 2018 Wood Memorial a lot simpler, easier than I would have disqualified him in the 2019 Jockey Club Gold Cup.
It was certainly, as I say, generated some controversy online, and the crowd at Belmont, there was some vocal folks down there as well. We're watching the head-on here. They did move out four pass, and to me, then given the margin, I thought it was enough to do it. As I said earlier, though, I was putting it maybe a 70-30 in that I would have gone for the DQ, so it wasn't egregious if they had kept it up the way it was, but I did think there was enough there. All of that said, it does wind up with Code of Honor getting the victory. And we were talking to Shug in the winner's circle afterwards, and certainly now this plays into potentially a three-year-old eclipse if they elect to go to the Breeders' Cup. I talked to some people yesterday and started to think about it. I think you can make a case. A Breeders' Cup win puts them in the conversation potentially for Horse of the Year.
Potentially. I don't know. I think people need to take a little bit more appreciation for the campaign that Midnight Dizu has put together. I understand she's run just against fillies and all, but she started her campaign in January, and she hasn't really missed any dances. She's maybe skipping the Churchill meet because she hasn't really run superbly there. But she's 7-for-7, goes to the Breeders' Cup. If she wins that one, she's 8-for-8 with 4 Grade 1s. And, you know, you can call the Belle Dame a Grade 2 if you want. But, you know, to me, it's historically a Grade 1. I think she's seriously deserving a lot of consideration for Horse of the Year, as is another horse, Bricks and Mortars. Bricks and Mortar, who I was just talking to Chad before he called, and, you know, he has not made a concrete decision yet on which Breeders' Cup race he's going to run in. He did say he's leaning towards a mile on the grass, but again, no decision's been made. But if he wins that one, you know, he would have an undefeated season, and you could make a claim there for Horse of the Year there. And I think that if either one of those two completes a perfect season with the campaigns that they had, I would put them, even with a Breeders' Cup Classic win for Code of Honor, I think I would have to put one of those two above him. That's one man, one opinion. But, you know, I think Code of Honor is now in the conversation for the 3-year-old division lead. I don't think he's necessarily the clear division 3-year-old leader. I still think you have to appreciate what Maximum Security's done. And I know that the disqualification of the Kentucky Derby will be looked at a couple of different ways. But, you know, he still has 2 Grade 1 wins and that performance in the Derby. So it's going to be very interesting, and I hope Code of Honor does run in the Breeders' Cup, because he's not definite to. I hope he does run, and if he does win, then that makes things a little bit easier, at least in the 3-year-old division.
Yeah, I agree with you. I talked to a couple people yesterday that said, boy, he's a slam dunk now for 3-year-old. To me, that's kind of almost an even Steven kind of thing at this point. The Breeders' Cup would certainly settle 3-year-old, and I also agree with you. To me, Code of Honor wins the Breeders' Cup Classic. He gets in the conversation for Horse of the Year. But I agree completely. Bricks and Mortar and Midnight Bijou should attract a lot more consideration, given what the – and McKenzie yesterday, I kind of demonstrated that handicap division this year. Just, oof, it's tough to get much excitement generated there. And both of the horses you mentioned have had great campaigns. And I think the voters will probably tilt that way as well, depending on how things work out at Santa Anita. All right.
And you also have to get away from the day, too, a little bit. You know, this day, you know, and then in Breeders' Cup Day, you need to sort of step back and then evaluate campaigns, as opposed to just, you know, in the heat of the moment. As you mentioned, you're talking to people yesterday right after a big win or a big loss, whatever, and things go, you know, the initial reaction. But when you step away and the ballots don't come until December, you know, you have a little more time to digest the whole campaign.
Absolutely. You mentioned Chad Brown, and he won the Pilgrim yesterday. Of the 4 stakes races, this is the one that had the most opportunity for something a little surprising to happen. Instructor does get it done at 5-2. Andesite runs second. Our Country runs third. I did not put Structor in my mix, but as we were doing the handicapping show, I said, you know what, you can make the case for this horse. To me, the buyer was a little bit light, but it's a Chad Brown horse that won the career debut. The second start, they can always step forward and get it done. Instructor does win here in the Pilgrim. The favorite was No Word at 2-1, a little bit of a disappointing fifth in there for that runner. But again, Chad Brown's horse in the second career start gets it done in the Pilgrim. Your thoughts?
Solid effort. He was wide most of the trip, so, you know, coming off kind of an easy pace, sit second off a slow pace win at Saratoga. The pace was a bit quicker here. He's 3-4 wide down the back stretch, kind of wide into the stretch, and, you know, it looks like he got a little bit tired late, but he still gutted out the victory. And, you know, I think they're looking forward to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf is a mile race. You probably get a bit stronger pace. Looks like he wants to sit off the pace and come with a run, and I think you get that set up in the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, I have been looking around the country and see where the better 2-year-old turf horses are, and obviously Europeans come over as well. But, you know, he'll be a serious contender for the juvenile turf, especially at a mile.
Well, I'll toss out there, we were up at Woodbine a couple of weeks ago, and West Point's horse, Decorated Invader, looks pretty good. I saw the West Point folks in the paddock before this race. I think they were scouting the competition.
Yeah, and they're also scouting to see, I'm sure they were, you know, they're also scouting jockey situation too, because I believe Irad rides both these horses, and if I was a betting man, and I am sometimes known to place a wager, I would think that he'll ride Chad Brown's horse in the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. All right, let's go on to the earlier stakes, which started the day, you would think, boy, these would be a couple of slam dunks, but they turned out to be a couple of pretty good races. First up, we're going to take a look at the Beldame at Midnight Bijou, 15 cents to the dollar. Wildcat at 5-2, I thought if you were going to go for an alternative, Wildcat was the one to go for. And as we're watching him turn into the stretch here, Wildcat is the number six horse and looks to give Midnight Bijou all she can handle, but she's going to pull away at the end, chart margin of 3.25. She's just proves her class in here, getting it done in the Beldame. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, and again, when you sort of try to make the case for Midnight Bijou, I mean, people are going to look, oh, it's a five-horse field. There wasn't much in there. Well, this is a Wildcat was a Breeders' Cup runner-up last year and a Grade 1 winner last year.
Won this race last year.
Right. When it was a Grade 1, which is last year, she won it. And she ran a heck of a race in the Breeders' Cup the staff last year, finishing ahead of Midnight Bijou and just behind Monomoy Girl. So there was a legitimate horse in this race. Midnight Bijou has beaten a late 3 or 4 times. And, you know, getting off course here, but a late could show up in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And wouldn't that be interesting if a late won the Breeders' Cup Classic? And Midnight Bijou has beaten her 4 times. So I thought Midnight Bijou won this race a little bit easier than it might look. I don't think Johnny was all out to get her home. I usually, you know, I thought Johnny was trying to get to the outside down the backside. He said, no, I just was trying to make sure that long shot, spring in the wind, wasn't going to, you know, push me down on the rail. And then after like a half mile, he decided to go, okay, I'm going to go on with it here. And, you know, they came together in the top of the stretch, and then Midnight Bijou, just like you said, shoulder class, just kind of pulled away. And, you know, I think probably the ideal prep for her in terms of the filly that likes to run, doesn't necessarily need to be sat on and have 8 or 9 weeks between races. And, you know, I think she got a useful performance there. She'll be on a plane tomorrow to California and begin preparations for the Breeders' Cup, provided it's still in California.
Jeff Bloom in the winner's circle afterwards was asked potentially would he go to the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he kind of said, yeah, I guess it's something you think about, but clearly that is not going to be the game plan. I mean, he made it clear their goal is the distaff.
Yeah, I think I asked him as well, and, you know, separately, I just said, would you even pre-enter? And he said, you know, it's just never come up. I mean, everything's been sort of worked back from the distaff, and I agree to stay on that pattern. I mean, you know, look, up until this year, we all doubted her ability to win at a mile and an eighth, right? Now, now we're going to expect her to go a mile and a quarter. I just think if you're them, you stick with your game plan, and if you complete a perfect 8-for-8 season with what would be 4 or 5 Grade 1s, you just say, look, is this, you know, I don't know that they necessarily came into the year or at any point of the year thinking, well, we could be horse of the year. I think they just wanted to have a nice, solid campaign a champion, and then, you know, send her through the auction ring a couple nights later. And I just think that's what they're going to settle with. And, well, you know, there's a lot to be said for perfection. She started her career or started her campaign in January and has been, you know, she's made every dance and has looked impressive winning all these races. And she deserves a shot to go in the Breeders' Cup distaff and deserves a shot to go out with a perfect season.
Yeah, and just to kind of go over and reiterate what you're saying, and Jeff Bloom agreed yesterday. He was asked, you know, is this kind of a horse of the year campaign? And he made the point. They started in January down at Sam Houston, Houston Ladies Classic, then goes over to Oaklawn, the Azari, the Apple Blossom, the Ogden Phipps, the Molly Pitcher, the Personal Ensign, and now the Beldame for a 7-for-7 career, a 7-for-7 season. That's a pretty good 4-year-old season. And this horse, as good as she was as a 3-year-old, is clearly a much improved 4-year-old.
And just really consistent and runs better. And she's just, you know, she's a very solid mare who was overshadowed last year by Monomoy Girl, who had a, you know, great season as a 3-year-old. And I guess the one thing you wish we could have seen this year was Midnight Bijou and Monomoy Girl, you know, seeing how they would stack up against each other at 4. It didn't work out for Monomoy Girl, who won't race this year, although they are thinking about bringing her back next year. But it didn't happen, and Midnight Bizou became the dominant force in the older Philly and Mare division.
Just before we move on to the Vosburgh, I want to touch on Fold-In with Midnight Bizou and the winner, Code of Honor of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, John Velasquez. Shug was asked about John Velasquez and had good words to say about him. But, boy, you know, going back to the first couple of weeks of the Saratoga meet where folks were kind of scratching their head, boy, Velasquez is off to a little bit of a slow start. I talked to him towards the end of the meet because by then he had kind of turned it around, not just at Saratoga, but out of town as well, out of Chicago and Del Mar. And then last week breaks that career record for graded stakes wins, did it on Friday, in fact, in the two-year-old stakes out at Del Mar, and then hops on the red eye and comes to New York and wins a couple grade ones. You watch him every day in New York. Comment a little bit about John Velasquez.
Look, just a real dedicated first-class athlete, who is the mark of consistency for 20-plus years, really is probably not fully appreciated. Especially when you see some of these younger guys who have had so much success so early. I mean, look, I don't think Johnny was as successful at 26, 27 as the Ortiz brothers are, but I'll be interested to see if the Ortiz brothers are still as successful and still doing this when they're 46, 47 like Johnny is. And it's a tribute to his dedication, to his craft, to his body, keeping himself in shape, to coming back and wanting to come back from serious injuries. I mean, if you remember, I guess it's 5 years now, maybe when he got really banged up in the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita, and you wondered if he was ever going to come back. And not only has he come back, but he's come back equally as good and still can ride a big race as good, if not better than anyone. And Shug was talking about, when I talked to him Thursday before the Jockey Club, he said, the one thing I really feel like I have in my corner is John Velasquez. That, in a five-horse field that you don't know how the race is going to be run, you feel confident, Johnny, knowing the racetrack, knowing the horse, and being able to, compensate or make up for wherever, however the race is run. And he did it yesterday. And, it takes John, the funny thing is, he was the regular rider, has been the regular rider of Vino Rosso up until yesterday. Nobody else rode Vino Rosso for yesterday other than Johnny. And, you sometimes hear about guys not wanting to claim foul against their clients. Johnny didn't have any problem claiming foul against Todd yesterday. And was back at the barn today working a horse for Todd. So no hard feelings, at least from the trainer-jockey relationship. I'm not so sure that the owner-jockey relationship will stay intact.
Interesting, though, that side note. But, again, a great guy, and he's been a good representative for the jockeys as well, the beyond New York even, as a member of the Jockeys Guild and whatnot. So it's been fun to watch over the past month and a half or so. All right, let's go back to the Vosburgh, because I think everyone thought, if you're playing a pick five or whatever, your single is going to be Imperial Hint. That is your free square, clearly. But, boy, did he have to work for it. We're going to watch number four will be Imperial Hint. And about mid-stretch, you think number six, Forensic Fire, with the horse for a course angle in his back pocket, is going to get this job done. And, in fact, Forensic Fire does put the head in front briefly. But, boy, what a gutsy comeback on the inside for Imperial Hint. They ding-dong it down to the wire. The chart margin winds up to be a nose. But, as I say, this was a little bit unexpected, I think, from the bettors. But he comes back and gets it done and saves all those people who did use that one as a free square at $2.50.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected Forensic Fire to be as close to the pace as he was. It just hasn't been his style of running. But Ivan Ortiz, I should say, said, the only chance I had to win this race, and it's a grade one, was to not let Imperial Hint just dance on the lead. And I think he caught the horse a little bit by surprise when he came to him at the upper stretch. The horse needed a step or two to, regain his momentum. And, Imperial Hint is a cool horse. It's nice to see, most of his wins have been dominant fashion. I know the True North here, I guess a year or so ago, he won by a neck, but that was the time he came from off the pace. Here he was on the pace, which I don't necessarily think he prefers. He can do it, but I don't think he prefers it to run that way. And I think he prefers to chase it, to run after someone. And he just showed how much heart he does have to go along with that talent. And it's all packed into a very small body because he's not a very big racehorse.
Yeah, it was a very, very gutsy performance. Dave, before we let you go, I'll ask a question. I don't know whether you'll know the answer, but I'm wondering if maybe you've talked to Barkley Tagg, because we talked to Jack Knowlton towards the end of the Saratoga meet. And Tis the Law was going to aim for the Bond Guard. They obviously didn't go in the Bond Guard last week, but I noticed he did work this week. Are they going to aim for the champagne with Tis the Law?
Well, he had a very solid workout this week, and it put the champagne in play. I think they're still debating whether to go in the champagne or go in the Sleepy Hollow on October 19th or skip both of them and go for the National. I think they're kind of, you know, I had a fairly long conversation with Barkley on Friday, and they're not really sure what they're going to do. I gave him, you know, the probables for the champagne, and I said, look, I think if the races that are going to be run this coming weekend between the Breeders' Futurity and the champagne is the race you probably want to be in. There'll be a smaller field, and I don't think you're going to get the top. I think you're going to get the quote-unquote other horses from barns like Todd Fletcher and maybe, well, I thought Mark Cassidy, but I guess not. I guess Cassidy's not running anything in the champagne, but I could see him running the champagne. It's not definite. They're going to probably play it down till the Wednesday's entry day.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because as I say, Jack was talking Bondguard, kind of taking the funny side route. And then when they didn't show up in there, I was curious. And then he had the workout, so I knew he was.
Yeah, he missed some time. You know, he had a shin injury that they missed some time after his maiden win. So I think they just ran out of time for the Bondguard. And now they get to this point, it's just a matter, you know, he probably needed 2 weeks more. Mm. And he got those weeks and those works. And now it's just a matter of how they, how they proceed. Do they take a swing in the champagne? You know, you could do the champagne and still come back in the Nashua, or if you do the champagne and you're successful, you could take a swing in the Breeders' Cup. But if you do the Sleepy Hollow, it kind of puts you in the middle there. You really can't come back in the Nashua, and then if you don't do that, what do you do? So, if I had a guess, I'd guess I'd show up in the champagne. But it's just a guess.
Yeah, interesting, because he certainly looked good up at Saratoga. Dave, as always, appreciate the time and the conversation. Tell people that they can find your work, obviously, the hard copy of the Daily Racing Form or DRF.com, and we'll talk again.
Okay, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Dave Grenick, again, Daily Racing Form, catch his work, DRF.com, and if you want to catch the recaps of yesterday's stakes action, you can do that there as well, obviously. As we wind up the show, do want to thank our friends at Woodbine for their sponsorship. Woodbine, pick, bet, and cheer on great racing north of the border. Reminder again, 3% bonus on your Churchill wagers today. There are some restrictions. Check out the website for that, capitalotb.com. Excuse me. Also, NFL Sunday today here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Wear a jersey, you get in for free. You also have a chance to win a jersey. Put your name on the squares, win a jersey potentially, or get a food voucher potentially if you match up the halftime or the final scores. But more importantly, watch all the games and enjoy all the racing action here every Sunday throughout the NFL season. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Don't forget there is thoroughbred racing tonight. That will include the racing from Remington Park, which includes that nice Oklahoma Derby, Owendale, Mucho Gusto, and more. That's tonight on Capital OTB TV and wagering via Capital OTB Bet. Also, the Capital OTB Bet is kind of changing up. There is a new format coming. You can access it and try it out if you want to. CapitalOTBBet.com/bet. And you can check out the new website and play around with it if you want to, kind of trying to put together a little tutorial too. It's pretty self-explanatory, but it's just a newer, a little bit of a different format with some other bells and whistles and whatnot. And so you'll be getting introduced to that over the next few weeks. All right. I'm just looking. I think I've covered everything. And we'll wind things up. We'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon, taking a look at Belmont and some of the other action from the various venues around the country. So wrapping it up for Racing Across America for this Sunday morning. We'll see you in a couple hours.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.